to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living. Are you confident that you've discovered your life purpose? I didn't discover mine until I was over 30 and quite by accident had someone point out to me that being a psychotherapist is what I came here to the earth to do. It seems to me we all yearn to identify and live our life's purpose, and yet things seem to get in the way. One thing that gets in the way is fear, and our guest today, Linda Allen, suggests that when we release fear we're holding, we can find and live our purpose. She's with us today to talk about how you can release fear and find your life purpose. Full Power Living is the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat. We have one on emotionalpro.com's radio page, and we have one on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. I'm told that Blog Talk is having a bit of problem with their chat, so if you're having any problem getting on, it's not you. Come on over to emotionalpro.com. You can also call us toll-free, 800-630-7858. 800-630-7858, and I'm sure you are going to want to talk to Linda. I did as soon as I got to know her. She says, if we can love ourselves, we can love the world. Linda Allen is a nationally renowned spiritual counselor and advisor, and she's done this for 40 years. She spent her life using her gift of prophecy to help those in search of true fulfillment. She teaches, she counsels, she offers personal readings, and she works to help those who seek her help. And she's also an author, The Night of the Witching Moon, and Until We Meet Dear John, are her two books, and she offers her help to others simply, straightforwardly, and with much love. You can find her on the net at Linda L. Allen, ALLEN.com. So Linda Allen, a great, wonderful, cheery, warm welcome to Full Power Living.
Hello there, Eileen. Are you with me?
Can
you
hear me?
I just heard a beep and I thought we were going away.
No, I think the beep means that you are now live.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. They just started appearing a while back, so I just think that's what it is.
Oh, okay.
So you may hear them again. Everybody wants to know their purpose, Linda, and as a start, how do you suggest that a person go about finding their purpose?
Well, now that's a strange question. I'm going to take you off of my... Just one second. Not hearing you very well. Now, how does one go about finding their soul purpose? I'm not absolutely sure because that's kind of a tough question. Can you rephrase it?
Well, I was thinking about so many people I talk to say, I just don't feel like I'm doing the right thing. I really want to find my purpose. I know that I have a purpose. I can't pick which one, if I have a number of talents, which one to focus on, that sort of thing. How do we?
Well, you know, I believe that we're living our life purpose, and I think wherever we are at the moment is where we're expected to be, where we're exactly where we're supposed to be. And so I have that question all the time. What is my life purpose? I can't answer it if you can't answer it. I feel we're living it at the moment we're in, and we should be in the moment. And if you feel there's something, all right, like, now I'm going to, and you probably already have picked this up for me, but I am severely dyslexic. And when I was in school, it was, talk about fear, I was afraid every day because back, I'm 66, so you know, that many years ago in school, we didn't diagnose it as, we didn't put in a label to what it really was.
Right.
So every day I would go to school, I would be afraid because I couldn't understand anything that I read. Now, if you speak to me, I could understand every word you said, and if I had to ace a test, if it was an oral test, I could ace that test. And so my fear was being dyslexic and not being competent. And so I took that fear, and I began to use it in my favor. And I really understood that my life purpose was to help people who have the same problem that I had. But it really wasn't the problem I thought it was, because it was a gift versus the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So when you're looking for your life purpose, it's simple. It's whatever it is that you're doing. And if you feel that's not enough, then you sit down with yourself and figure out how you're going to change it. I rewrite my life every day I get up. You know, I have an appointment book. I never look at the next day. That day, the Monday I get up, that's the only day I'm going to look. The next day, so I don't worry about the end of that day or do I make enough money for that month. I don't fear any of that anymore because I'm going to live it one day at a time. So one day at a time, you're living your own life purpose. If you need to change it, then we could talk about your what your desires are. Where do you feel like you're lacking in your life? Or is it just your thinking?
Mm-hmm. You know, in my psychotherapy work, I talk with people about that. Sometimes a person, for example, will be in a relationship and the person doesn't really fulfill them in all the ways that they think they want to be fulfilled. And so they'll say something like, well, I'm not sure this person is the one. And I say to them, well, this person is the one for you right this minute. And because obviously you have something to learn with this one, and either it will continue the relationship or it won't, but this person is the one for you for right now because they're assisting you with your learning. And that's what you're saying in terms of life purpose too, I think.
It is what I'm saying, and that's exactly what I would say to that person that says, well, there's something missing. Well, is it missing in that person or is it missing in yourself? And is that person here to bring that out in you?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's our life lesson. Each person, we come to this earth with more than one soulmate anyway, but they're different forms of soulmates. And my next book is called Beyond the Veil, and it's explaining all of the levels of soulmate relationships and past lives. I am so enamored with past lives. I love it. I love to do past life studies. Like I would take your picture of you and your husband, and I would do a past life study by just looking at you. And then I'd write you a little storybook on where I could see that lifetime. And probably I like to go to the most favorites and the least favorites to see where you were with him. But anyway, that's kind of off the track. But that's my love. That's my passion.
Ah, well, it brings up all kinds of things. I'm going to stay on topic right now, but I'm
okay.
Really curious about soulmates, and that, of course, we're going to have you back when you get Beyond the Veil done. So you brought up the topic of fear, Linda, you know, that the fear you had was of having yourself exposed through the dyslexia. But fear can also get in the way of us living our purpose. Now, if we define that we're living our purpose moment to moment, then we're really talking about our moment to moment fear, are we not?
Yes, we are. And fear is a tough one. But some people look at it as our worst enemy. I look at it as our best friend, because fear it will help you to achieve it makes you work harder. And so your achievements are behind your fear. That's what fear is. It's a driving force to success.
Wow, I like
that. Can you remember the first time you maybe talked in front of people, and you're such an intelligent, brilliant lady. Were you afraid to talk to the people?
That's very interesting. I actually did my first talking in front of people when I was in fourth grade. I had a wonderful teacher, Mrs. White, who had the incredible ability to identify kids' talents and maximize them. So every day after lunch, I would come in and she would allot me a half hour, and I would stand up in front of the class. I'd ask my classmates what they'd like to hear a story about, and I would make up the story, tell it to them, and illustrate it on the blackboard every day. And I had no fear. However, in the mid-80s, I had been doing some speaking to get my psychotherapy practice going. And I made an appointment to go and talk to a civic club in Sausalito, California. And on my way there, I was so terrified, I pulled my car over to the side of the road. And I suddenly remembered that I had given these talks as a kid, and the only thing that calmed me down was to say, Eileen, you obviously have a talent. You know, you're just going to share what you know, and that's it. You don't have to be the be-all, end-all. But yes, I was scared then, but not the first time.
And that's the way I feel about fear as a whole. You know, whatever we're afraid of, I speak too. I get my words all mixed up, just like right now. You just kind of have to know me to follow me. And so that I'm always afraid of that. I'm always afraid I'm going to get in front of an audience and I'm going to say something really stupid. In fact, you can predict it because I will. And that's what carries me through, is the fact that I already know that, so there isn't anything to fear, because they aren't going to judge me for that. They're going to listen to the contents of my words, mm-hmm. and they're going to take from it something that I know they don't. And I'm just now enlightening them with this, and that's what I would say any fear. For instance, if you're going out on a date, your first date, and you're scared to death that you're going to have pepper in your teeth, and if you do, then make something fun out of that. Take all your fears and turn them around and make them useful. Don't waste any moment or any fear or any positive or any negative, because it all turns out to be exactly what we needed in the first place. Mm-hmm. So when you pulled over, all you had to remember when you pulled over on the side of the road, that you're a superstar. We're all superstars. And we have nothing to be afraid of if we're already a superstar. But if we're not a superstar in our own mind, we're not going to be one in front of that audience.
Well, I didn't feel like one. Well, what do you mean we're all superstars? Let's enlighten us with that.
Okay, well, let's just use you, because I have you here and I can. You're a psychotherapist with a wonderful practice. You're a beautiful, intelligent woman. You don't always feel like that you're all of those things, but you are, because you already know something that we don't. You're already capable of doing something someone else is not capable of doing. You're a psychotherapist. You work with the mind. I'm a psychic. I work with the mind. A banker works with the people. A McDonald's sales clerk is just as important as we are, and yet they fear it. You know, when we're driving through McDonald's, I'm pretty sure you don't, but I love Egg McMuffin, so I do. but when you're driving through McDonald's, that little person at the window who just took your order is nearly afraid of you when you drive up, and I look at them and I think, you know, honey, you're in charge. You're the most important person in my life right now. You're in front of me, and you're in charge. You are somebody wonderful.
Aww.
And I so appreciate that you took that job so that you could give me that Egg McMuffin. So when we fear that someone's not that we're going to screw up, or we're going to make a wrong move, or we're going to fall in love with the wrong person, there's no such thing as wrong. Everything is right.
Wow.
And our biggest fear is the fear of being wrong or making a mistake. And there's no mistakes.
So, in other words, we're fearing, our fears really are phantoms. They're not even real.
They're not even real.
Uh-huh. You know, when you were talking about still having perhaps some fear of speaking in front of a group, I have no dyslexia, can you tell? when you're talking about speaking before a group and still having some fear, I was thinking one of the things that you can offer people is the fact that you go ahead and get up and speak anyway. Just as on Dancing with the Stars, the young man whose name I can't remember right now, who's been an actor on a soap opera and was severely burned when he was a soldier, and he still got up and won Dancing with the Stars. That kind of a message is really inspiring to people. It's not, you're not making a mistake, even if your dyslexia shows.
And I finally think I realized that, and it will show. I mean, as soon as I open my mouth, it'll show. And the first thing I do, I love to laugh, and I laugh all the time. And every day I get up, it's just a funny. I go to bed and wake up in the middle of the night just laughing because something will just strike me funny. But I can laugh at everything. And if you can laugh at yourself and your fear, you can conquer it. And so when I stand up in front of an audience and have them to laugh, then I know that it's okay. They're human. They're not expecting me to be perfect. My words aren't going to come out exactly right. And when I write to you, and you will see it, because I have to really study to write you something, because I'll write it and it looks normal to me, and then when I read it, when you'll answer me and it comes back, I read it and all my words were scrambled. And so for a long time I wouldn't use the computer because I knew that was going to happen. And now I just do it this way. You know what? I'm so busy. Be glad I sat down to write you today. And that's the attitude you take. You know, just go, so what? And someone wrote me, do you know you need to learn spelling? And I wrote him back and said, you know what, I probably never will. Do you want me to write you or not? And that was my attitude. So, and you have to. And I don't have a cockiness about that. I just have an assurance that fears are here for us to accomplish our purpose. If we didn't have the fear, we probably wouldn't even know we weren't accomplishing our purpose.
Uh-huh. That's very interesting. All right. Wow, this has been an interesting conversation. Our time is gone, and we're up to our first break, Linda. We're talking today with Linda L. Allen, a woman who has had and used her gift of prophecy toward the good of people and the world for her entire life. She's the author of two books, including The Night of the Witching Moon. And we're talking with Linda about how you can remove deep fear in order to reach your life's purpose. We'll have more on this when we return here on Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have just a few announcements. Our upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on emotionalpro.com. And next week, my friend Susanna Gratz, who's a very effective publicist who's helped me connect with many of the most interesting guests we've had on Full Power Living for the past 2 years, is going to be my guest. Susanna is also an artist, and she's going to be talking with us about her new concept for bringing art into our homes. As more and more galleries close down, we need to bring great art into our homes and our places of business in order to see and enjoy them, and Susanna has become Art Muse to accomplish this. You'll really enjoy listening to her, and I hope you don't miss a single episode of Full Power Living. We do want you to talk with us right now. Blog Talk Radio has brought itself up. We've got our chat going, and you can hear us on Blog Talk if you tune in there. You can also call toll-free 800-630-7858 or listen on emotionalpro.com. If you miss us live, go to iTunes and subscribe. Thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Now, today we're talking with Linda Allen. And Linda, I've looked at some of the videos you have on your site, and I invite other people to do so too, but I wondered if briefly you would tell us, I think you were ill around the age of 3, and that's when you discovered that you have the gift of prophecy that you have?
I was ran over by a car. Oh. I was playing in the backyard with my aunt, and her brother, who was 17 at the time, had just gotten a new red convertible, and, you know, that's many years ago. You can just imagine what it looked like. And he was getting it ready to go on a date, and he whipped around in the backyard and hit me, and she was screaming, so he kept running over me, ran over me 3 times.
Oh, my gosh.
And buried me in the ground, and so they didn't have a hospital. I was born in a little town called Sedan, Kansas, and there wasn't a hospital in that town. So they took me to the morgue because they believed that I was dead, and my grandfather insisted I wasn't. So he convinced them to take me to, I had no vital signs because it was, I guess I was so crushed you couldn't read them. Mm. And back then, I don't, you know, if the doctor is, it was kind of like a horse and buggy doctor. Mm-hmm. And so they did take me to the hospital, and as you can see, I lived. And when I came awake, because evidently I don't remember any part of it until the part of it of me playing with the ball. And I would throw the ball, my doctor would be at the end of the bed, and he would check my motor skills and throw me a ball. And I would throw it to someone that I believed was next to him. And that was what I believed was my mother. That's what inspired the book, The Night of the Witching Moon, because it was a lifetime I remembered living in a gypsy camp. And turned out it was the gypsy camp of Salem. So the story is pretty interesting because it tells you, I feel like I died that day. I feel mm-hmm. like I'm a walk-in, and that, again, is another whole subject.
Yes, it is.
I feel like that little girl left her body. And then, because my mother, I don't know my father. I never did know my father. But I didn't know my mother, and I didn't know my grandmother in that hospital room. But I knew the person standing by the doctor, which was a spirit, and which I believe was my gypsy mother.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's how it all started. And then from then on, I would talk to the spirits and trust in the spirits that I believed were people that no one else could see but me. And so I was labeled at the age of 3 as having brain damage. And I would walk into a room and people would roll their finger around their head, you know, like, oh, she's psycho. And I really thought I may be, because I thought I could be, because if I could see somebody that no one else could see, something had to be wrong with me. And so and that's when I became introverted and afraid to speak, because I didn't know if I was talking to the real person or the spirit person. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, when you think about 63 years ago, psychics was not an everyday conversation.
That's true.
We would scare the bejesus out of you. And so, I was in trouble often because I predicted something, such as my grandmother's heart attack. And my mother accused me of causing that heart attack.
Oh, that's such a terrible thing for children to carry.
It was hard. And so I married at a very young age, and he also thought I had something really wicked. He'd call me the devil because I would know what he was doing. Mm-hmm. So it was not an easy life. Now it's great. You know, a while ago when we were talking about getting older and how fabulous that is, it is just fabulous. You can be who you are.
That's really true. You know, we have a caller on the line, Linda. Teresa.
Great.
Teresa, are you on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, hi, Linda.
Hi, Teresa.
Yeah, your story sounds like some that, you know, friends of mine have had, you know, a pastor of mine, you know, when she was little. She would know everything about the people, and her father would tell her to don't say nothing, nobody be quiet. She would know, like,
oh, my gosh.
Like she used to tell us in church, like if it was a man and woman walking, he'd say, oh, that's Mr. and Mrs. And she'd say at 5 years old, they're not married, Daddy, they're not married. And he'd say, shut up, how do you know that? You know, but so I kind of know.
You know, that happened to me, that when I was I was probably 6 or 7. And I told on a neighbor, but I did not know I was telling.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
you get in big trouble with that.
That's
a great story. Thanks for sharing that. Do you have a question?
Well, I have a lot going on or not going on in my life, but I was just, I'm the type that I've been alone for a long time, and I had met a guy on the bus, and I already know confirmation that when I got it, my mother said, that's your future husband, and it was like strange because I don't open up to men. That's like, I can see through them, and it's like for someone to touch us like that, we knew he was like for real, but I don't even know his name or nothing like that. But, you know, I hope I will see him again, but, you know, I kind of know
that sounds like Linda's story.
Oh, it is. And it is so up my alley. Let me tell you, honey. Oh my God. My husband and I crossed paths. Now, this is my third husband, and if he's not careful, there will be a fourth, but he's my third husband because my first husband could not stand what I did at all. It was we couldn't discuss it. I had to hide everything to not let anyone know, and I took that for 18 years, and we just parted ways. I married 2 years later. I didn't know him when I was married to my first husband, but I married this man who was the opposite. He was just wonderful and caring and loving and giving. But we married and found out we were just too much brother and sister. We'd been together so many lifetimes as family that it wasn't working. So we stayed together 17 years and never cheated on each other, stayed best friends, but we couldn't get together physically because it didn't feel right. So 17 years later, I go, wow, I really think I want to try a real marriage. And he said, well, why? This one's working. I go, it isn't. There isn't one. So let's just divorce, and then we just stay friends. And anyway, so we did. And I meet my husband I was gambling. I was playing quarter poker in a little casino in Colorado. When we meet, we find out we lived in the same city. We lived down the street from each other. Now, we meet in Colorado, but we'd both lived in Texas. Prior to that, you guys have no idea how many times we bumped into each other and never knew it. And then when we met, oh, my gosh, the stories I could tell you. So what I'm going to say to you is when you're soulmated and you do know, and when those eyes connect, you do know. There doesn't have to be any words spoken at all.
Mm-hmm.
Your souls will continuously search for the other one. And so it will not settle down until it meets. But if he's your soulmate, you're his. Soulmates are equal. So it's the fiery twin flame soulmates are equal. So you get on that bus, and you just keep the eye out for him. Don't search too hard because your souls could be afraid of that. Just let it happen. And I do think that it will.
Yes.
That's great.
And I would love for you to email me and let me know when this encounter happens.
What's your email address, Linda?
It's lallen1234@msn.com.
Okay, I'll put that on the chat, too. That's lallen1234@msn.com, right?
Yes, and that's my dyslexic address. It's one I could write and not forget.
All right, well, thank you so much for your call, Teresa.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, enjoy your new relationship.
Yeah, I'm receiving it already.
Good for you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Thank you so much.
Now, Linda, along with this, recently, when I met my husband about 18 years ago, we actually wrote back and forth email for a year before we even talked on the phone. But when we made voice contact, we were both affected by each other's voice. And I recently was talking with a young woman about 24 who has gotten into a relationship, and she was telling me that she's very affected by the person's voice. What's that about?
Well, that's because it's a past life memory. And when you hear that voice, you can even smell their smell. And if you read my book, and you give me your address, I'll send it to you. But it, the night of the witching moon, I was talking about the scent of a man that I couldn't forget. And I could smell that scent from childhood up, and when I was 55, I smelled him, the real scent. I was having a party of 200 people, and I wasn't paying any attention to guests. I was just entertaining them because they were my clients, and walked past this man, never looked at his face, and I smelled him and went, oh, my God, and it was him. And he was the person he's the Dear John, and Until We Meet Again, Dear John.
Uh-huh.
And you just know. I mean, so whatever the vibration of the voice was, the soothing part, that was what you remembered from the other lifetime. And so your soul searched for that voice.
Ah.
And probably the 24-year-old's the same way. Her soul is searching. You know, we have, what is the word I'm looking for? We're looking for a certain characteristic that we could remember in a soulmate. And it can be the eyes, the hair, the smell, the height. I mean, it's all types of characteristics in a person. And we're only going to recognize one of them, and all it took for you was the voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our producer, Paul, says, I, too, am lysdexic at times.
Good.
Okay. So we have... We have a comment on the chat. I feel grateful to Linda and other psychics who share the gift of insight with us. She helps us to see just a little beyond what's conscious and helps to grow our spiritual body, just as we nurture and validate small children about living in their physical body.
I love that. That's why my next book's called Beyond the Veil. Because if we can just see beyond the veil, all of us are born with the psychic, that's my dyslexic moment. We're all born with some intuition, but we have a veil over that third eye. And most of us keep the veil over it. But if you can lift the veil and just see a little beyond it, you will know this lifetime is the flash of a moment. And then there are other lifetimes to be lived, and that we've lived many others before this one.
When you're talking about a perspective like that, my experience is that if I have a perspective like that, I'm not going to be fearful. But if I don't have a perspective like that, I might be afraid of everything.
And I see that in people all the time, too. And you're right. Because, you know, it's just like, let's just go, I was raised a Baptist. And the Baptist church was terrified of what I could do, and even terrified of me. And I went to all churches. I mean, any church in this little 1800 town that you could go to, I went to them. But the church was fearful of my being able to see, and they were afraid that maybe they even had a witch in their congregation.
Mm-hmm.
So. Overcoming that fear and knowing that the reason they were afraid was they had to have lived before. I knew this. When I was 3 years old, I remembered walking on the beach with Jesus. I could tell you details. And got in Sunday school and did that. And it was something that a three-year-old doesn't do. I'm sure I talked in a three-year-old voice. I still do. But I knew that I lived before, but I was also afraid of living in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that was, the fear was because I was afraid I'd screw it up, and now I'm not afraid of that at all because I know I'll get a do-over. In my next lifetime, I get a do-over. Mm-hmm. fear is human. It's, if mm-hmm. we're going to have some type of fear, I don't know many people who don't fear something.
Well,
and we are in the physical.
That's really interesting. I've told people who listen to this show before, so I hope those of you who've heard this will bear with me. But Linda, when I turned 50, I realized that my entire life I had been afraid. And I was at the time living as a single parent. I wasn't sure if I was going to have enough money. I didn't, you know, there were so many ifs. I had no support around me, no savings in the bank, et cetera, et cetera. So I was living fearfully all the time. And I got tired of it. And I thought, you know, I'm sick of living fearfully. I'll bet you it's possible not to have to be in fear all the time. So I began to look at it. Now, what I found is that there are opposites on the earth. There's light and dark and positive and negative, et cetera, et cetera. So I started asking myself, what's the opposite of fear? And what I came up with is faith. And as I've told it, some people like to call it trust instead, but faith was what I got. And what I realized is you can't be in light and dark at the same time. You can't be in fear and faith at the same time. So I realized that when I was feeling fearful, I was not experiencing faith. And I'd like to experience faith instead of fear. How do I get there? And the device that I created for myself was to ask myself, if I had a written guarantee from God that everything was going to work out and I would be okay, what would I be paying attention to? What decisions would I be making? And what actions would I take? And to the best of my ability, I then pay attention to those things, make those decisions, and take those actions. And it has led me, I'm not saying that I'm totally fear-free, but my life is essentially a fearless life now, and has been for 15, 20 years as a result of that.
I don't think you could say it any better than that. Because, and we really do have a written guarantee from God that it's going to be okay. We just aren't recognizing that.
Well, that's what I'm hearing from you. Yeah.
And we do. And, you know, if someone comes in and everyone's afraid of money, most people are afraid of money. So I'm going to take you back at 50 years old, and let's just pretend you're 50. And I'm going to go, okay, Eileen, you've been worrying about money how long? And you would probably say, a good 25 years. And I'm going, okay, yeah. Well, 50 years ago, when you started worrying about money, are you any better off now than you were then? Did the worry help? Because if it did, I would suggest you just keep on worrying. But if it didn't help, then we need to let that go. So doesn't that make sense? I mean, what we fear the most is what's going to make us the strongest anyway. So fear and money, you're never going to be broke because you're always conscientious of the fact that you've got to make it. First off, there's no reason to be afraid of it. We're not going to have any more if we do. We're not going to have any less if we don't. So why bother with it? Go into something else. You know, it's the same way with health. All of us are going to have health problems, or most of us, through our lifetime, one way or another. But if we fear that, that's what we're putting our energy there instead of the I'm more afraid of living than I am dying. It's harder to live than it is to die. But we fear death. Uh-huh. Why would we fear death? Fear's a new beginning. I mean, death's a new beginning. It's a new lifetime. I'm not going to tell you to run out there and end your life right now because it's better on the other side, because we came here to learn the lesson of living. We need to keep our contract. We came here, God's the one that should be able to say, okay, it's time to give it up. But I'm not even sure that when I see suicide people that wasn't in their contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I have a lot of people around me, especially now, that have had suicide people, including myself. And knowing what I know and looking back at the situation, he feared dying when the whole time he was going to take his own life.
Wow.
And that's all he talked about. He wouldn't eat certain foods. He was afraid it would kill him. But he took his own life. So
yeah,
fear just absolutely makes no sense.
That was somebody who was in your life that you're talking
mm-hmm,
about.
That was John.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And the book is Until We Meet Again, Dear John. It was a love story, how I met him and how he was in my past life. And I remember details of it. And before he even came along, I wrote this book. And when he came along, he fit it to the T. But I also knew he wasn't going to stick around. Mm. And so that was really difficult. Every day I knew him, I knew that it could be the last because he was going to do it.
Wow.
And he did.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have quite a bit of respect. I had a client many years ago who'd been injured at the age of 11, went into a deep coma, and when he awoke, he couldn't move his arms and legs, and he couldn't talk, and he communicated by punching out letters on a little box, and his aides would put the letters together and tell you what he was saying. And I met him when he was in his, he was about 26 or 27, and he was very frustrated and very angry and said he was so debilitated he couldn't even kill himself, which annoyed him. And I told him that he was too angry to kill himself anyway. He should actually get into life and enjoy it for a while, which he did. But when he got to be 33, he decided he'd had enough, and he decided to commit suicide by starving himself to death, which he did. And what was so curious to me is even authorities, like the legal system in the county in which he lived, was alerted that he was doing this, and the legal system said it was okay. He was allowed to do that if he wanted to. And so he did. He was quite happy with himself. So it's a different way of looking at suicide, I think. That for him, it was a relief. Well, we're up to our second break, Linda. We're talking today with the loving and caring Linda Allen, who uses her gift of prophecy to help others find and lead a life of true fulfillment. She's an author, a frequent media guest. She teaches classes and offers readings. Check out her website at Linda L. Allen, A-L-L-E-N, LindaLAllen.com. We're going to have more from Linda Allen when we come back here on Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. Welcome back to Full Power Living. If you're listening to this show live on July 12th, you have a fabulous opportunity to call and talk with Linda Allen directly, the way Teresa did. You can ask a question that's important to you, and that question will likely be important to someone else when you ask it. So consider calling us now at 800-630-7858 to talk with our renowned psychic author and teacher, Linda Allen. So, Linda, I've done a lot of work with fear in my life, as I'm sure you probably know. I mean, being around somebody who's psychic, there are no hidden things here, so I'll just come out with it. But one of the first, I like working with principles, and one of the first principles that I came up with is that, two things. One, I found that when a fear came up in my life, it was an indication to me of the next thing I needed to work on in my life, and it wouldn't go away until I worked on it. And secondly, I came up with the principle that when you operate on the motive of fear, you're guaranteed to create the thing you're afraid of. I wonder if you would comment on those two.
Well, I agree with you. I feel like that, like I said before, fear makes us stronger, and we do have to confront it. I think it's successful to have fear and to overcome it. And really, when you look at fear, it's silly. If you just think about, okay, driving in the rain. I'm afraid to drive in the rain. I just can't do it. So I won't. So today I'm going to drive in the rain. I'll let you know how that goes. But I haven't, up until this point, driven in the rain.
Uh-huh.
I've been too afraid of it. I have to go to the doctor's after this, and it's pouring down here in Houston. So I'm going to let you know if I can overcome my fear and how I felt after that.
Okay. I want you to remember that everything, you have a written guarantee from God, and that everything is going to turn out fine and you're going to be fine. Keep that
in mind.
I'm
going to be proud of myself.
That's right. That's right. It's a piece
when you overcome your fears, don't you stand back and not only are you really proud of yourself that you did it, you know, I was single for a really long time, and a lot of my friends would say, well, I would never go out alone. Well, golly, I will. I'm going to go out alone because I'm not afraid of the people that I'm going to run into. I'm more afraid of sitting home being alone. And I never understood that. Why are you afraid? But that is a common fear of people meeting strangers. My common fear, even with you, you're such an intelligent woman. You're so well-read and so well-spoken. My fear is bobbling my words and embarrassing you.
Well, that's interesting.
It was my fear. It was like, well, can I get my message across? There's so many things that I know that I'm gifted with, that God's gifted me with. For instance, putting out the fires in Colorado. And I know without a shadow of a doubt I did it. No, without a shadow of a doubt. The fires were completely out of control. One of them, my gosh, was just about to burn one of my friend's houses down. I have pictures of it all. They called me and said, please help. So I went, okay, I'll go to the fire right now and I'll stop it. That night it was 90% controlled. On the other end of the spectrum was Colorado Springs, if you read about that. It was burning out of control at 15% contained. So I go there, and 1 hour later, it's 35% contained. I know I can do that.
But
there isn't any doubt in my mind.
What do you mean you go there?
If a hurricane's coming, do what?
What do you mean you go there? What did you actually do?
Well, that's another show. I'm getting myself on your show a lot, right?
Right.
See, I had no fear of that. But I have known from probably the age of 3 that I actually leave my body, my spirit, or at least part of my spirit. I'm never really sure. If anyone knows what I actually do, I'd love to hear it. But I, for instance, let's just say the hurricane in Galveston that was coming a few years ago. It was headed straight to Houston and Galveston. Well, I didn't know anything about that because I don't watch the news. So someone has to tell me. So my husband didn't know me, and we'd just gotten married, very rocky marriage from the start. Read the book Until We Meet Again, Dear John, you'll understand it all. So he doesn't know who I am. He doesn't know what I do. I think he said this on the video. I'm not sure. I never watched his videos. But so he tells me, he said, so what about that hurricane in Houston? And he's just making light talk. And I'd perk up and I said, what hurricane? And he said, well, it's headed down the Houston shore. And I go, well, my gosh, we got to stop it. And he goes, what do you mean you got to stop it? And I said, oh, I can't talk to you right now. I have to go stop this hurricane. So I just sit here with my hands out, and he's looking at me like, what have I gotten myself into? This is a crazy woman. And so I started telling him every step of that hurricane, what I was seeing and what the hurricane was saying to me. And so he was documenting it all because he's an engineer. So we have to have our proof right in front of us, right? So he's documenting everything I say and following it on the news, and I was telling him before the news was telling him. And so then he told me about this 25-foot wall of water that was going to come in and take out Galveston. And I said, well, how far does the water have to go down? I said, where would it be safe? I'll go talk to the water. And he goes, well, it's got to come in under 12 feet. And I went, okay, I can do that. He said, well, it's an hour away. That water's going to hit in an hour. How can you stop it in an hour? I said, you're just going to have to trust me. The water came in at 10 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
And wow. These stories go on and on and on and on, and there's no end to them because, and I don't fear that because I know it. Now, I'm challenged with it because people are constantly challenging me, like on talk shows sometimes. Now, how can you say you stop water? I don't know. I do. It didn't happen. What if I hadn't have done it? Would it have? We will never know that. But I know if I believe that I stopped that water, I did.
Okay. And what
and if I stopped those fires, I did. And I'm going to keep working that way.
And what you're saying is that you actually talk to the water and you talk to the fire.
And
the hurricane.
You're absolutely right. And the hurricanes tell me their name, and we name them, but that's never their name. The hurricane years and years ago told me that it was driven by the wind, and that the wind is a person. It's a spirit that drives this wind. And boy, you talk about spirits to me, I already know I can talk to them. So I just automatically left spiritually and went out here in wherever it was and talked to that hurricane, and it would tell me why it was angry. It would tell me why it was going to hit an area that it was going to hit. Sometimes it made so much sense to me that I didn't even try to talk it out of it. But when it came to Galveston and it was going to wipe out that old city and cause so much pain, then we needed to stop it. The same thing happened in New Orleans when it was going to New Orleans, when the hurricane was headed there, Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And my son works for the utility company, and he's a manager over managers. So when something disastrous happened, he has to go there.
Mm-hmm.
He calls me, and he says, now, Mom, you may not hear from me for a few days because I've got to go to that storm in New Orleans. And I went, what storm, Roger? I don't know about a storm. He said, well, the hurricane's headed there. It's going to hit there tonight, and it's a 5 category. I went, oh, my God, no, it's not going to be a 5 category. I'll stop that. Well, he's watched this all his life, but he's still a non-believer. And he said, okay, Mom, you get that down. I said, well, where do we need it to be safe? He said, well, we need it to be under a 4. It came in at 3.5 or something like that.
Mm. Wow.
And then I told him he had to put it all over his internet that his mom stopped it, but he wouldn't do it.
Okay. I know you have an appointment. We have another questioner. Do you have a minute to take a quick question?
I do.
Okay. Who's on the line?
Yes. This is a Galliano from down the bayou.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to tell you that, no, I don't have a question. And I can tell you that from the core of Louisiana and what we went through, we are insulted, not by the show, but by you. So I can tell you that normally, yeah, I'm with a lot of different things, but I've got to tell you, I lost family. There were numbers painted on the door. Now, you know, I just have no respect for you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for your comment. Do you have a response to that? Yeah.
Well, I can understand what she was feeling, and I understand people lost their lives. I wish I could have helped that. But I'm telling you that it would have been a lot worse if I hadn't have been there.
Uh-huh.
And it was already too late. It was coming in anyway. So, yes, I'm very sorry she lost her family, and I have total respect for her feeling.
Her comment also illustrates exactly what you're talking about, which is that if you don't haven't been around the kind of thing that you do, or you can't find a proof or a reason for it, it's really hard to believe and accept. And especially if you've experienced a lot of pain around an incident like you're talking about, it's really hard to really believe, oh, it could have been even worse had you not interceded. And so I appreciate that you're clear in yourself, Linda, for what was so for you, just as our caller is clear within herself for what's true for her.
And I so respect it. I want to say something really quick about if we have time. Someone asked me a question. I was doing an event, and this lady said, how can you stop what God intended? And so that was a great question, and it's similar to what your caller just said. How could I? And I had to stop and think about that. And I thought, well, so I said, you know, that's a great question. Here's my answer. If God's given me the gift, and I know I have it, and I don't use it, I would have less respect for myself.
Uh-huh. That's really good. And just briefly, all of us can do some of this. How do we get this bigger perspective ourselves?
Well, you have to go in. Are you talking about how?
Yeah, like,
now, what do you
like
mean
if,
by?
If something's coming my way, like I'm in New Orleans and I want to do something about talking to the water, can anybody do it, or do they have to have?
You bet. Right now, we form circles of love and energy and God's love and energy, and we form circles, and we pray together, and we do the best we can. Now, I'm going to tell you, we're not going to leave this earth alive. We're going to die somehow. That's a given. Are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we're going to die. We choose that, because the only thing that we do not have control over is the day we're born. Our parents do, but we don't. And the day we die. That's all in God's hands. Did he give us the gift of energy to heal this world? He absolutely did. And if we can heal this world, we can also stop hurricanes. We can control fires. Some of it's already written anyway, so it's history. I couldn't stop 911, and I knew about that. And there wasn't anything I could do. And I tried everything, but I wasn't able to do it. That was history written. New Orleans was history written. Her family died because that was their end. Mm. Can we help the city not suffer so much? Yes, and we did. And we all can do that. So when I know something's coming down the pipe, or any of my class members know, we write each other and we all pray at the same time, which we did on the fires. Mm-hmm. We prayed at the same time and look at them. And they were out of control. So how do you explain that, going from out of control to not at all? When we can stand there with God and God says, use what I've given you, and we can do that and make a difference in this world, it would be a shame not to use it.
I really appreciate that philosophy, and I really appreciate you being on the show with us today, Linda. I know you have another appointment. I really appreciate you being here. Your website is lindallallen.com, and your books are The Night of the Witching Moon and Until We Meet Again, Dear John. Thank you, Linda, so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time and noon Eastern Time for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. In the meantime, I want to invite you to sign up and listen to some of our archives at emotionalpro.com. And when you leave your name and email address for me, I'm going to be able to advise you of upcoming guests and also special events, such as the upcoming Emotional Intelligence Telesummit, in which I'm participating in September. Kim Knight of the Art of Health in New Zealand has brought together top people in the field of emotional literacy and emotional intelligence to help us fill out the vital and important emotional side of our life. I'm presenting in this telesummit, and I'm also offering 3 free hours of individual or family coaching for a lucky winner. So get on over to the Art of Health, H-E-A-L-T-H, and check that out. Paul Johnston, Fresh Talk Media, our producer and fantastic support person. Thank you, Paul. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.